Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Did you hear about this? This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you haven't been before. That's right. It's a verb. That's never happened to you orally, but perhaps visually, media outlets encourage you to set your eyes on a story that they believe that you need to hear. Should we? What do we do with the news reports that tell us that something is brewing inside of a local church with a particular individual? We need to actually practice some Christian discernment. Isn't it funny? It's not just what is a false teaching or false teacher. That's certainly discernment. Knowing how to behave in a certain circumstance, applying biblical wisdom, that's discernment. But we also need to discern between what we should digest and what we should spit out of our mouths, or at least out of our eyes. I know anatomically that didn't exactly work, but you get the point. We are bombarded with all kinds of breaking news stories, not just on Fox News, but in Christian news. And they scream for our attention. And they have a tendency to tickle our ears, but I would like to suggest there are just some times we got to say, no, thank you, not interested, not my business, not now. This tends to be a category that many of us conservative biblicists struggle with, don't we? For instance, we see a story breaking in the news about perhaps a high-profile Christian, and we want to render a verdict now. And I got to put him in this camp immediately. Might I suggest to you, there might be a different category, a different column into which we put particular people. You got yourself a known false teacher. Well, that's the camp that they are placed in because that's the camp that they live in. And then, of course, you've got some people who demonstrate just they used to be a decent teacher, but now they're espousing heresy. Well, that's pretty easy to deal with. But what about those who are orthodox but are kind of getting a little kind of wonky? What do we do with them? I think what we do with them is put them in a column that is difficult for me, perhaps for you. Wait and see. Just going to wait and just got to give this time. I don't have to render a verdict, a judgment on what a church is doing, what a pastor is teaching. I could just let it sit in a little bit of theological limbo, if you will. I don't have to definitively determine where the person is at because the story is progressing and the amount of information that you and I receive is really limited. So might I encourage us to perhaps stretch a little bit and recognize that we can have a Galatians, I think it's chapter 4 column, when Paul says to the Galatians, now please remember what the Galatians were doing. They were dabbling with rank heresy. It was being introduced into their church. And it was reported to Paul that some of the Galatians are buying a works-based program. It was circumcision. That the Judaizers said, hey, you still need to be circumcised or you can't be a member of God's family. And Paul obviously denounced that, calling it anathema and those who partake in it anathema. So the false teachers, he said, you're anathema because they were spouting the false teaching. But to the church itself, while he certainly had a strong rebuke for them, he also said, I'm concerned about you. He said, if you go for it, you will be cut off. I think there was a pun intended. This is going to be the end of your walk with Christ, because you're going to reveal that you don't have a walk with Christ, because you are making faith nothing as soon as you add works. And yet it seems he was also saying, I'm concerned about you. I'm concerned. Did he render a full-blown church discipline edict? He didn't. Further, he didn't tell some people to just leave the church and move on to go another place. He exercised some pastoral wisdom, giving it a little time. This is not to suggest for a second that we lower our guard or our standard of theology. Of course we don't. But perhaps we need to become comfortable with a position of wait and see, because we just don't know at this point. And I think that same principle applied to the realm of what we consume with our ears and with our eyes is also applicable. I don't know yet. For instance, I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers a story about a ministry in which its donors are filing lawsuits. Oh, what do I do with this? It would be super easy to share it and to talk about it because, well, it's kind of juicy. And it kind of feels good to disseminate this bad news. But I'm not gonna. Why? Because it's a dispute inside of a ministry and I don't know what's going on. And I'm simply going to wait. It must be adjudicated before you and I can jump in and go, yep, see, there it is. Knew it all along about that ministry. I can't do that. And maybe you're thinking, oh, you're just saying that because it's a ministry with which you have a partnership or you're friends with. No, it's not. It's not. But it's not my place to take what is going on in an unsettled dispute, render a verdict, and just pass it along. I fear that we have a tendency, forget the plural we. I have a tendency to hear a story and like to share it because why? Why? Why do I need to share that story? I wonder if it isn't because I have a propensity to, here it comes, tale bear. Gossip. Look, this is an unknown story. And I would no doubt shade it a particular way if I shared it, because I do have feelings on it. But I wonder how much of these disseminating of news stories, passing along of articles that we have a tendency to do, are nothing but gossip. And we're participating in sharing something that doesn't build up, but actually tears down. Story number two. This is the story of a pastor who historically has shown himself to have bad behavior. And there are reports that this fellow is once again exhibiting those bad characteristics. Is he? And the answer is, I don't know. It's report. Who's reporting on this one? Okay, this is Christian Post. I see it every single day. Get lots of stories from Christian Post. But this is an accusation made by a local church member against a pastor of whom I think it's safe to say you wouldn't call me a fan, making an accusation. And I could go, yeah, I knew it. See, that's the braha. See, this is, would there be a time for that? Yep, there would. Once it's been proven to be true. Once I know and I feel like I can say something that is helpful to the conversation, that encourages the body, then yep, I most certainly can. But for the time being, I need to sit in the camp of, I just got to wait. Oh, I don't like it because I just have a knee-jerk reaction to everything. Do you? Where you see the story and yeah, this is the way it is. Well, I don't always know. And sometimes I have to wait. And that is one of the angles of the art of biblical discernment. Knowing when to talk and when not to talk. You could also call it discretion. Why? Consider 1 Corinthians 14 and what Paul is driving at. I think there are several things, but for our instance, he's driving at what spiritual gifts are all about. They are for the edification of the body. We're to be edifying the body. And when I'm participating, potentially, in tale-bearing or disseminating information that just isn't accurate yet, then, I'm violating the point that Paul is trying to make in 1 Corinthians 14. Another story. I Kiss Dating Goodbye author Josh Harris offering deconstruction class on Christianity for $275. Yep, I shared his name. Yep, I shared the story. Why? Because it's a public news story. He has posted it himself. I know it to be true. And we can also realize this is what happens when somebody reveals themselves to be a non-believer. They actually reveal themselves, as nice and pleasant as they may be, to be an enemy of Christ. And you and I can learn about stories like that so that we can take heed lest we fall. But I am not going to share an unsubstantiated story, which would be participating in nothing but tale-bearing. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Wretched Radio today. Have you checked out Wretched TV yet? Yep, Wretched TV is a daily 30-minute program hosted by Todd with witnessing encounters, discussions on tough theological issues, and other topics the Christians are facing today. And it's simple to watch. Just check out your local listings for one of the 135 stations and networks that air Wretched TV, or if you'd like, you can log on to wretched.org/TV. And Wretched TV is also available on Roku, Amazon Prime, Truly, and Amazon Fire TV Stick. We've made it extremely simple for you to find Wretched TV, and we owe it all, of course, to our gospel partners. It's only because of their efforts that we're able to make Wretched TV available to everybody. If you're not already a gospel partner, we would love for you to prayerfully consider becoming one. You can help us to continue taking Wretched all over the world in our goal of preaching the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. And for that to continue, we need you. Just visit wretched.org/donate to join us as a gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
You know Paul and Cindy Marty. They are the founders and the runners of the Tomorrow Clubs, kids clubs all throughout Eastern Europe. Not only did the kids get saved.
We were in the country of Hungary and we were meeting with our country director. His name is Zoltan. And we asked him, Zoltan, how did you come to Christ? And he said, 4 years ago, my wife and I went to a neighboring village where they had a camp. And he said, we heard the gospel and got saved. And he said, our entire village that we were living in were atheists. 4 years ago, this is. And he said, now we're the only two Christians. Our kids have become Christians, and they have a Tomorrow Club with 30 kids. Can you imagine? But there are still fully atheist villages. It's a great white harvest out there.
Indeed there is. Would you like to help with that harvest? Please consider sponsoring a Tomorrow Club. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Well, most of you know by now that one of our main desires here at Wretched is reaching the millennial generation, your kids and your grandkids. And thus, Road Trip to Truth was born. Season 1 is currently available, Season 2 is set to be released soon, and Season 3 already in production. And another element that we have been so extremely excited about is the Road Trip to Truth homeschool curriculum. Students will leave this interactive course with a deeper relationship with God and a more effective way to share their faith. So visit wretched.org/homeschool right now to order the homeschool curriculum and strengthen the faith of your kids before they head off to college. We know you don't want them to become another statistic, and neither do we want them to wind up being counted among the 70% of kids who claim to leave the faith in university. Road Trip to Truth, reaching and equipping the next generation. wretched.org/homeschool or roadtriptotruth.org.
Know your church fathers.
Athanasius was the Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century. He was a champion of the Church's fight against Arianism and was a chief author of the Nicene Creed. However, his orthodoxy did not equal popularity. Athanasius was exiled no less than 5 times, but Athanasius chose to honor God instead of man.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And by the way, feel free to bust me. This is Wretched Radio, and this is going outside of the talk show host handbook, but I think it might be in the biblical handbook, which trumps even the talk show host handbook, and that is regarding the issue of correction, receiving a rebuke. I got to be honest with you. I don't as wholeheartedly desire it as much as I should. I actually desire it more than I used to. So the Lord must be growing me in some regard. I never wanted it before. Well, because you don't when you know everything. And, well, God has revealed to me there might be one or two things I don't know. And so it is. I want to be corrected because I don't want to be wrong, because what we're dealing with when it talks to Christian subjects, stories, articles, whatever's flying around the internet, I think we need to remember the earnest business in which we are engaged. We are talking about the building of Christ's church, strengthening it, making sure that it is a beacon, making sure that it is a light unto darkened nations. And if I just might take a little bit of a rabbit trail, there's a phrase that's been sticking in my head lately, and it seems to just keep coming up. In particular, when I take the time to pray for our brothers and sisters overseas and for the laborers who are overseas. What should we be praying? Well, I think for their protection, for their safety, for their growth, for their encouragement, for their provision. Those are all good things. But I've keep hearing this phrase in my noggin, which means I'm not hearing from God. It's just a Bible phrase that's stuck in my head. Let the nations be glad. Let the nations be glad. Are you watching what's going on around the world and you're seeing the darkness that's falling increasingly? And even in more civilized nations, you look at even Western Europe, the nations aren't glad. Although they might be happy on occasion, but they're not glad. They're not a glad people. They can't be. And this is why the further away you get from Christianity, the glummer it becomes. Go to an Eastern European country and you'll notice, whoa, nobody is smiling or laughing or talking. It's so heavy. Let the nations be glad when they hear the gospel, when they respond to the good news that Jesus died for sinners and you can be set free. That too is what we should be praying for. In fact, if I might, pray for Christians in Afghanistan. Taliban takes over churches. And puts churches in peril, rather. It is unknown how many Christians live in Afghanistan, although some estimates put the number between 10 and 12,000. All right. So I'm gonna ask the Lord to protect these people, to provide for these people, to defend these people, to keep these people, to persevere these people. But why? Well, many reasons, but one of them would be so that they can live, thrive, and be a light to a very dark nation, so that the nation of Afghanistan will be glad. I think about Afghanistan, and here's my first thought. Okie dokie, it was the graveyard for the Russians. They tried to deal with it in a military way, and they backed out. They couldn't get the job done. We've been over there since, what, 1991 or two, probably two, and now we're not doing a good job of it, but we're pulling up. Friel, that was a bit of an understatement. We're not doing a good job of it. There could be tens of thousands of Americans who are stuck in Afghanistan because of the protocols that were put in place to just leave, well, you know, $80 billion worth of military equipment behind. just as best I can tell as a non-political pundit, I don't think that was done so good. So those are the thoughts that come to mind for me. But I should also be thinking it's just lost. It's bleak. It is dark there. And I want the nations to be glad. I don't just want Afghanistan to be brought under control. Want that. But I want the people to rejoice and to be glad. Isn't that what we should be praying for? And speaking of praying for our brothers and sisters, and don't worry, I do realize I'm still down the rabbit hole. North Korean authorities complicit in torture, murder, and slavery. This is just brutal. The United Kingdom's all-party parliamentary group on North Korea. There is evidence of Democratic People's Republic of Korean officials involvement in murder and killings, torture, inhuman, wonder if it should be inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment, sexual violence, including rape, sexual violence, sex trafficking, forced abortions, what? Infanticide, modern day slavery, persecution based on religion or belief, and much more. We got to be praying for our brothers and sisters that they would be glad underneath a regime that is this wicked. The 2021 report claims that there are reasons to believe that some of the atrocities reach the threshold of genocide, particularly in relation to three groups: Christians, half Chinese children, and the, quote, hostile group. This is a report from the U.S. State Department, says that executions have been carried out for possession of Bibles, circulating anti-regime propaganda material, and superstitious activities. I'm not suggesting some of the frustrations we're experiencing in the West are insignificant, but by comparison, at this point, they are. Conservative estimates suggest that about 80 to 120,000 people are held in labor and political prison camps inside of North Korea. Most of those are going to be our brothers and sisters. Please make sure you commit some time to praying for these people every day. Please. There was Jimmy, I don't know if you saw this. It seems to me I was with you, but maybe not. Maybe you remember the images of the fellow who was arrested and he was put in whatever they call it, detainment camps in North Korea. And they literally have him in like this cave, underground cave that they dig out where it's like 5 feet by 3 feet. That's where he just gets dumped and then they drop some food down for him. And that can go on until, well, they die or they're released. We got to be praying for our brothers and sisters. There are no definitive estimates on how many people have died inside North Korean political camps, but some believe the number ranges from 100,000 to many millions. Needless to say, the North Korean people aren't glad, and we should be praying for that and for the protection of our brothers and sisters. Let's climb out of the rabbit hole and get back to a willingness to be corrected. It isn't something that I'm nuts about, but it's something that I should be desiring more and more and more. And so it is. I invite you, when you hear me violate this principle that we're talking about of not sharing news that isn't any of our beeswax, that's the Greek word for tail-bearing, not sharing stuff that's not our beeswax, let me know. Tag me. idea@wretched.org. I'd like to be corrected. What a pride monster, honestly. What is it that causes us, especially when we are corrected by our children, to go, hey, how dare you? Isn't that true? And isn't it possible that even our young children have a better perspective on us than we have of ourselves? Isn't that the blessing of family? Isn't that also the blessing of church, that we do not see ourselves in truth? We are self-deceived. I always think I've got it right, and I'm justified in everything that I do. It's my flesh. I'm going to be careful. I don't want to say that's my nature, because it's not. We only have one new nature. But we do have a carcass that keeps kicking around with us, and it keeps kicking against the goads, especially those who would offer me help, which is what the local church does. We were talking about this. We're out filming Road Trip to Truth Season 3. We were with Nate Pickowitz. Just practicing a little self-control.
Just letting that one sit out.
Just let... Miss Picklewickle had a baby. She named him Tiny. It's great, brother, up in New Hampshire. That's right, where they live free or die. We were talking about the importance of the local church to encourage young people. Hey, what you're missing out in the local church is that people can help you and you can help others. When we lovingly rebuke one another, correct one another, so that together we can grow in godliness. The best context for that, your home and the local church. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, how's this for irony? Former staff members of the socialist magazine Current Affairs say they were recently terminated after their boss became upset that they inquired about shared authority. In an open letter to the remaining staff, the former staff alleged that they were fired by Nathan Robinson to avoid restructuring that would limit his power, saying, quote, "Yes, we were fired by a socialist magazine for trying to start a worker co-op." Oh, the irony. Socialism seems like a good idea until it comes home to roost. So apparently talking about it is all this guy ever really wanted to do. A federal appeals court upheld a ban on dismemberment abortions in Texas yesterday. Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed the law banning the procedure in 2017, but a district judge ruled that the ban was unconstitutional because apparently not only should you be allowed to murder innocent babies, but you should also be allowed to do it in the most brutal way possible. But yesterday, a federal appeals court ruled 9-5 that Texas had a legitimate interest in passing the law. The ruling stated that pregnant women are not being given the entire truth of what the procedure will do to the baby, not just murder it, but mutilate it in the process. Well, a Muslim father in Uganda murdered his son for converting to Christianity, though he was charged with only manslaughter. The son began following Christ in 2019, at which time his father kicked him out of the family home. His mother spent the last several months attempting to convince her son to reconcile with his father, and he finally consented and returned home on August 1st. As the story goes, his father was away from the home until August 14th, at which time he returned and then demanded his son to renounce Christ. And when the son did not, his father left the house, only to return the next day and eventually hang his son with a rope. Though the law in Uganda provides for religious freedom, including the right to convert from one faith to another, the father was only charged with manslaughter. Well, another persecution news, the Taliban are now reportedly killing those who they have found to have Bible apps on their mobile device. While some are saying that this is only a mere power grab, the Taliban itself has said that they are on a conquest to put the entire world under Islamic law. And it's becoming more evident with the day as the Taliban ramp up their efforts to locate and persecute Christians. An underground church recently revealed that Islamic jihadists have a hit list that contains information regarding Christians that they seek to capture and kill. This comes after earlier reports revealing that the Taliban has sent letters and messages to Christian house churches warning them that they know who they are and what they're doing. And that's forced believers to run for their lives, especially as they have nowhere safe to hide in Afghanistan at the moment because the U.S. Embassy was vacated by the Biden administration. Please pray fervently for all of our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan. Pray for their physical protection and provision. Pray for their spiritual provision. And pray that God would use this to advance His gospel
throughout Afghanistan. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 312 AD. Emperor Constantine is converted after seeing a vision of the cross. He becomes a defender and advocate of the oppressed Christians. After his death, Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, which endured in some form for another 1,500 years. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, do you know what that means? I do. This is Wretched Radio, and this is Wretched Worldview with Dr. Owen Strachan.
Is humanity a virus on the earth? Not long ago, the actor who plays Aquaman in those superhero movies said that in a public gathering. The implication was that humanity has overtaken the earth and needs to effectively be eradicated to some degree. It was a very disturbing point, but it's one actually that a lot of people, I think, would emphasize today. In this latest lesson in Wretched Worldview, we're going to consider the idea of eugenics, broadly meaning population control. You can fit a lot of stuff under this: in vitro fertilization, sterilization, aborting the weak, the needy, euthanasia. We're going to focus on the issue in this session of population control. And we're going to see, thankfully, that the Bible gives us a much better perspective than one of hysteria towards the human race. So now,
is this subject salient? It certainly is. There are vocal proponents of population control. Really big, powerful, billionaire-type people. Bill Gates! Sorry, a little tickle right there. So this is something that is relevant for us. Now, it probably hasn't trickled down into your home yet, but the forces of evil, they just never stop. We must be prepared to give a Christian defense step by step. Biblically, not opinion-driven, not using sociological reports that eugenics tends to be bad for a nation. Well, yeah, it does, but it tends to be really bad for the people who are being offed, or the people who aren't allowed to be born because it's against the law. Is this subject relevant?
Well, let's look at some pre-understandings that people have when it comes to the issue of eugenics or population control. First, we will hear today that people are taking the Earth's resources because they're inherently selfish. Here's that virus idea, basically, in that same articulation, that people are a cancer on the Earth, and so they're a problem. Second, we're destroying the Earth, and so we need to control the population. Third, God gave us the gift of technology so we can use it however we want. Fourth, if modern scientists encourage it, we automatically shouldn't do it. This is kind of the contrarian version of the previous one. So if a modern scientist says to do it, don't do it. I don't know how that would exactly impact the next headache you have with Tylenol. I'm not anti-Tylenol. This session is not anti-Tylenol. Okay, I think we're getting hijacked here.
Indeed we are, but those are the pre-understandings that we bring to the party. For the time being, we lose them, and as long as I hit the pause button, interject what might be the motive of these people, and it seems to me those people who want to limit the population, it is because they're concerned that we, the people, are going to destroy the place, and they're going to die. Why do we see high-profile gazillionaires desiring to make it's a combination of like a robot and a human. There's a name for this, and I better remember what it is, because I think it's becoming increasingly popular. Basically, and little boiled down here, but to get to the point, when before you die, we cut off your head, we freeze it, and wait until we've got a body that it can plop on that's mechanical. That is a movement out there. Why would that be? Isn't it funny how people continue to seek for a fountain of youth so that they don't have to die? my estimation, that's what's behind a lot of these billionaires.
I think you hijacked yourself.
Yeah, let's go to the Bible. Explicit Bible verses that speak to the issue of eugenics or population control. Deuteronomy 27:18. Cursed be anyone who misleads a blind man on the road, and the people shall say amen. Okay, we've kind of plucked this one out. There's a lot of different laws in Exodus and Deuteronomy that we don't always read about, even in our daily devotions. But they have interesting ways to speak into our faith, even New Covenant, New Testamental faith. You see here in the Old Testament that you are supposed to treat a blind man with grace and charity and kindness. And if you didn't, you were cursed. Why does that pop up in a lesson on eugenics? Because it shows us a certain mindset toward the weak, toward the needy. 2 Samuel 9. This is a longer passage. In this passage, we are dealing with King David and Saul's remaining son, Mephibosheth. In this passage, King David cares for Mephibosheth, who is crippled. So the king of Israel does this. He takes his arch rival's son, brings him into his house, gives him a seat at the table to eat at all the days of his life, and thus shows great kindness and even respect to Mephibosheth. That's very interesting for our purposes.
Excuse me. Could you just, for my sake, say Mephibosheth three times?
Come on, I just said it like three times already.
You did pretty well.
It was hard enough.
Sorry.
How much are they paying me for that? Okay, Matthew 11, moving to the New Testament, and Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them, and blessed is the one who is not offended by me." What does Jesus do here? He gives testimony to the fact that he is going to the least of these. He is pouring out grace on them, those nobody cares for. Those probably people in higher up positions might even like to eliminate. Jesus goes to and shows grace to. That's very significant as we think about the issue of eugenics or population control. Next text, Luke 14. He also said to the man who had invited him, "When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the just." Friends, we have to see this. Christianity is a faith that summons us to go and care for those who cannot help themselves. Contra Darwinian evolution, contra a secular way of thinking, naturalism. Christianity is not about survival of the fittest. It is about sacrifice of the fittest. It is about those who can help themselves giving so that other people who are in difficult positions will be blessed and lifted up, ultimately preach the gospel to and thus redeemed. That's what this faith is all about. That bears distinctively on the topic of eugenics.
Before Dr. Owen Strand continues, maybe you don't recall the biblical phrase that's been floating around my noggin for a season, but I do, and that is, let the nations be glad. Let the nations be glad. Just consider what it is like to live in a nation where life is not valued the way the Bible does. Imagine that people who are perhaps not as perfect as the rest of us are deemed second-class citizens or even potentially deserving of death. How happy would you be to live in that place? And this is again why the propagation of the gospel is that, in part, that the nations would be glad, because their thinking gets righted and the fruit of living the way that God designed us to live within the precepts that he has written down for us is joy and gladness. Eugenics, oofta.
Population control. Let's look at some implicit Bible verses as well. Next, we have a bunch. Genesis 1, the doctrine of the Imago Dei. So God created man in his own image. Exodus 4, then the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord?" What a stunning Bible verse. It tells us that actually God fashions us exactly the way he wants us to be, whether that's not being able to speak, not being able to hear, not being able to see. Man, these are difficult realities. It requires grace and charity to talk about these things. You have to know that God made you this way. And if I can be slightly humorous for just a minute, God made me this height, and God made Todd that height. But Todd is currently sitting at the desk, so I'm actually taller than him right
but
now.
But not by much. This cannot be stressed. This cannot be stressed enough. I want you to like preach on this. The world sees people who can't contribute much as useless feeders.
Yes.
We see them as blessings with potential. So the contra distinction, it is a bigger distinction than, say, my height and your height.
Yes.
Got to see the video to get that reference. Would you like to know the word that I was groping to discover in describing how do we take a human being and put it with this mechanical thing that we might live forever? The modern day fountain of youth, transhumanism. Transhumanism. That we are, I don't know what the trans is about, but we're changed. We're different. We're a different kind of human, but we get to live forever because our heads are located on a body that doesn't wear out. Now, I don't know how they have it planned to keep our brain from wearing out, but it is an effort to try to protect themselves that they might live forever. And that is, there's more than one, but one of the big motivators behind eugenics is we got to protect this planet. This is why Bill Gates wants you to eat a vegan-based hamburger meat that isn't really meat at all. Because he wants your good health? No, it's worse for you than beef. But his concern is that the cattle, if we keep eating them, are going to keep blowing a hole in the ozone layer and he might die. And that is what drives a very relevant subject, modern eugenics, on Wretched Worldview, available at wretched.org with a study guide. This is Wretched Radio. Typical radio commercials will have one big shebang, the opening line. Do we have your attention now? This particular commercial has eight. Have we got your attention now? MediShare, affordable biblical health sharing, will save the average family $500 per month. Second, MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to typical health insurance. Double, that's times two if you weren't homeschooled. A massive network of providers to choose from. MediShare is the most trusted name in healthcare sharing. They've been around for 25 years. $4 billion in healthcare bills have been shared. If you call them now, you will save on the joining fee. They're going to erase it. That's another $170. This is a limited time offer, which means make it snappy. Call 1-844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE. Did I mention 844-34-BIBLE to get your MediShare quote in under 2 minutes?
Did you realize that everything seems to have its own day to celebrate it? August, in particular, has National Creamsicle Day, National Relaxation Day, and let's not forget about the month-long celebrations for National Catfish Month, National Goat Cheese Month, and the one I just deemed most important above all, International Gospel Partners Month. That's right. Celebrate with us, because while I'm obviously joking about International Gospel Partners Month, I am not joking about our reliance on you. Wretched relies on the kindness and generosity of our gospel partners to reach millions all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. And thanks to you, Wretched Radio is among the top 5% of all podcasts across all platforms. Without you, that's not possible. So would you please prayerfully consider becoming a gospel partner today? And what better time to do it than right now during International Gospel Partners Month? Just visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321.
Be careful. Be very, very careful, my cold-hearted conservative friend, because this just might melt your heart. If you are a supporter of preborn.org/wretched, providing ultrasounds, ultrasound machines, and sonograms, careful, this might just melt your heart.
That sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to Mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
You're giving love when you support Preborn, because a mommy sees a baby in the womb courtesy of an ultrasound machine and 80% of the time keeps the baby. $28 an ultrasound, or perhaps You might be of the means to provide an actual ultrasound machine if you can. Oh, they need them, and they'll put them to work, and it'll show some love. Preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. The book of Joshua tells of the conquest and division of the Promised Land. There are two consistent themes in Joshua: God's faithfulness and his aversion to unfaithfulness. When you wonder how committed God is to his people, or doubt the seriousness of idolatry, let Joshua remind you that your God is a jealous God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is the Bible relevant? Yeah, this is Wretched Radio, Wretched Worldview, our new resource, 22 lectures, Dr. Owen Strand and myself, tackling contemporary subjects, but marching through them with a Christian framework so that we can speak into a culture that is dark and not filled with joy, and that would like to end the lives, limit the lives, or prevent the lives of those that might jeopardize our lives, that might be a bit of a burden, that might cost more money, that could eat more cows. Dr. Owen Strand working through now the New Testament. What does it say about eugenics? That word isn't even in the Bible, but the Bible still speaks to it relevantly.
John 9, his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the work of God might be displayed in him." Stunning material. Jesus indicating once again that God forms us just as he desires us to be. Does the curse affect us all in different ways? Yes, it does, but God actually uses our weaknesses to display his glory. Weakness is not a sign that you should be killed off or uncared for. Weakness is a sign that God has made you that way so that he will extend his grace to you, ideally through his church, through his people, indwelt by his Spirit.
That also goes, by the way, for our senior friends, believer or not. Their life, while it is limited in what it can accomplish on a daily basis, is still an imago Dei life. And we see Jesus pointing out the reason for it, that in their weakness, he can be seen as strong as they endure their remaining days on this earth, potentially even painfully, but relying on him and still rejoicing. Isn't it funny how you and I can read a section of scripture like the one that Dr. Owen Strand just pointed out and just go, "Yeah, that's right," but we don't think about the application of it. God has ordained the status of all of us and what our abilities are or are not, what our physical health is and what it isn't, for a purpose. More Bible verses.
9. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. 1 Timothy 5, final text. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are truly widows. Here again, just another dimension of this glorious doctrine of the church's generosity to the least of these, in this case, widows, those who are in a difficult position in life, who have suffered a tragic loss. The early church, the local church, was set up, constituted to care for the needy. You cannot emphasize this enough. Christianity is not about survival of the fittest. It is about sacrifice, self-sacrifice of the fittest. And that goes all the way up to Jesus, the center of the gospel. Let's look at how the gospel impacts this issue of eugenics or population control.
Now, please note, if that seems confusing to you, remember the principle. This is one of our steps in determining a biblical worldview. We've got to import the gospel into the situation because everything is ultimately somehow related to the gospel. Why? Because that is what the universe is about, the gospel of Jesus Christ. So it stands to reason, if that is the case, every molecule is dancing around the cross We should consider the cross when we consider a subject like eugenics.
Number one, the gospel causes us to love men and women made in God's image. Number two, the gospel helps us avoid a paranoid approach to human life on this planet. Christians are sometimes said to be paranoid. Maybe once in a while we justify that reputation. In reality, nothing is more paranoid than naturalism. Naturalism does not approach the world from a standpoint that God has created it and filled it with His goodness and actually set it up so that there are tons of resources for people. Naturalism says there's only a few resources and only the fittest, really, at the end of the day, are going to get them. We have a counter perspective to a naturalistic one. Couldn't be more distinct, and I'm not mincing my words on that count. Third, the gospel makes us value the world God has made and responsibly steward it. We love this world. We see ourselves as stewards of it by virtue of the Imago Dei, and He is moving.
I'm just thinking, when you talk about naturalism, first of all, they have no basis to make any of these moral judgments about what is good and bad. And the reality is, if they were being faithful to their worldview of Darwinian evolution, they should want to see the sick actually killed. I mean, they're living the worldview. When you want to end that life, that's extending your worldview to its natural conclusion. Furthermore, the naturalist is a bully. They're here. They got stuff. They don't want weaker people or other outsiders to come in. That is the very definition of the stronger imposing their values on the weak. We call that bullying in common parlance. Now, the naturalist would say that's bad with no basis, but we would agree with them. The Christian worldview is a worldview that actually has a foundation for morality, and it's a kind worldview. It is a good worldview. It is a worldview that is loving. The naturalistic worldview is not.
There's no love in the naturalistic worldview. There's no real forgiveness.
Love of self.
There's no doctrine of the Imago Dei, the image of God. There's no, therefore, uplift of the weak and the needy. These things honestly don't exist. And if naturalists practice those kind of virtues, they're cheating.
Right.
Whereas Christians have all of this preloaded in our worldview, in our Christianity, in our salvific life. And so Christians are the ones, honestly, not perfectly, who have contributed these different elements of philanthropy, of charity, of uplift to the world. Todd, the reality is, survival of the fittest was not just this kind of interesting observation of Charles Darwin and others in the 19th century. It was taken not simply as an observation, but as a principle, really as the defining principle. Tragically, people like Hitler, Margaret Sanger, who advocated for abortion and called African-American children weeds in different places, these kind of figures put that doctrine into practice.
German modern-day eugenics, it's in America too. Oliver Wendell Holmes,
it is.
Teddy Roosevelt. Darwinian evolution at its core is racist because he happened to be a thoroughgoing racist.
Yes, and it's still here. It's not just Hitler. It's not just Sanger, wicked as she was. It's here today. It's here in an abortive culture. It's here in a culture that tries to control fertility, that sterilizes certain parts of the populace.
China is the premier example.
Absolutely. The one-child policy. So this is here now. It's in the past, but it's here now. We have to oppose it. So we got to oppose this stuff. We got to love the least of these. And we got to think about the historic Christian position. First thing to mention, the church has seen God as the one who creates and oversees the family, not the state. Chrysostom, the ability to give birth has its beginning from above, from God's providence. And for this, neither women's nature nor cohabitation with the husband or anything else is sufficient by itself. You want to cause some controversy today? Have a bunch of kids. People will look at you askance. They will say very rude comments. They will actually think that you're a virus on the earth, as I alluded to earlier. In reality, the Christian worldview is the opposite. We see children as a gift from God. We don't see the earth as being drained from a scarcity mentality. Chrysostom didn't, and many others did not as well. Next thing to note, with emerging technologies, many evangelicals in the more recent time have emphasized a cautious perspective, thinking of in vitro fertilization and other matters, that permits careful reflection on the ends and processes of medical opportunities. We should be cautious about controlling pregnancy, fertility, science, these kind of things. It's not that we don't avail ourselves of medical advancement, something like this. I think we do in many respects, but we have to play carefully in the sandbox. We don't simply assume that because technology is developed, we automatically use it. We want to be very careful, and we want to always live a Christian worldview that has God as the one who controls all things, not us. Personal testimony considerations first. Number one, how can I convey to unbelievers that I am pro-science, but also pro-human? Second, how can I engage the paranoia around me with the gospel? There's a lot of paranoia. There's a ton of fear. People do think that we're a cancer on the earth. People do think the human race is the problem. We can say sin has ravaged things, and humans, tragically, are the ones who act out sin. So we've actually got some kind of overlap there, but we have to make clear that even as we are shot through with sin, totally depraved in historic theological language, it's also the case that God made us in His image. Third, we need to say this: do my actions back up my words? Do I demonstrate real concern for needy people? Do I live out survival of the fittest, or do I live out sacrifice of the fittest?
You are perhaps thinking, let's get back to those pre-understandings, which would be our objections. Well, if you'd like to hear that, it's available at wretched.org. The resource is Wretched Worldview. Dr. Owen Strand thoughtfully and biblically and historically and gospel-centeredly working through contemporary issues. Your Sunday school class, I'm telling you, they're going to light up at wretched.org. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.